Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all around the world, you're listening to yet another edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host of the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Selegy. Say hi to the good folks, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah. This was a heavy ass week, and I mean, you know why already. I mean, if you've been paying any attention at all, you kind of know why. We were originally expecting, when we were going to do this show like a week ago, we thought, you know, it was probably going to be mostly about primaries that happened this week. And we will be talking about them. And yes, I did vote in them because, you know, a lot of them happened in my home state of Georgia. And we pretty much thought that was going to be like the extent of the major stuff. And then it happened again. It happened again. Some asshole with not enough sense in his head got himself a hold of a couple of AR-15s and a shotgun. He walked into a public place, and he killed over 20 people. I think the count was like 21. But this one is a little different because he didn't walk into a mall or a church or a park or a supermarket like that asshole in Buffalo did. No, this one walked into an elementary school in Uvalde, New York, and he killed 18 in Texas. Yeah, not New York, Texas. And he killed 18 fourth graders, kids. And we'll talk about it more when we get to it. But, you know, Sandy Hook left me depressed. This one just made me furious. And I don't think I'm alone either. And Chris, I don't know if you can back me up on this or not, but something feels like this one may have been a breaking point of some kind. I don't know why. You would think after Sandy Hook, that would have been the breaking point, but it wasn't, even though we had, you know, Barack Obama as president then, and I'm pretty sure we had a Democratic majority in both houses. But this one, something happened this time around, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the fact that it was once again a bunch of little kids. I don't know if it was just the sheer absolute debacle that the police response was. I don't know if it was just the absolute callousness of the GOP who tried to once again write this off on things like mental health and culture and, you know, schools not being well armed enough, you know, everything but the guns themselves. And for the first time in a long ass time, it seems like for the first time nobody was fucking buying it. And we're gonna get into the reason, one of the reasons why, and it's mostly because of Greg Abbott's upcoming opponent in the race for governor down there. We'll be talking about that, but before we get to all that heavy shit, and believe me, we will be getting to it, we need to, as always, you know, just sort of ease into it first by talking a little bit about, you know, the type of stuff we did this week. And so, yeah, Chris, sort of start us off what you were doing this week, you know, other than, you know, simmering in just sheer anger at the horrendousness of it all.
Yeah, so that's, it's been a bit of a weather weekend here, sort of threats of rain throughout, so nothing too hot this week, though the humidity was sort of the big thing there. But yeah, that's been kind of the thing there. Let's see, for watching stuff, I watched the two episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi that are up on Disney Plus right now. Enjoying that a lot. Kind of has a lot more going on to it than, you know, Book of Boba Fett did, which was more of a sort of spinoff of The Mandalorian, was just furthering The Mandalorian story. This is sort of telling something more original that is a lot more interesting. Boba Fett's just an inherently boring character for the most part.
Yeah.
Especially in his series where he spent, you know, a lot of his time going back to tanks, recovering.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, doing actual things, especially because mm-hmm. a lot of that series is just about him governing this area that he hasn't, done before. So, but here this is set about 10 years after the end of episode 3, as Obi-Wan is sort of hanging out on Tatooine, trying to keep an eye on Luke as he's growing up and sort of doing his thing. And yeah, the Inquisitors, the people that are hunting the Jedis that remain, are very much hanging around, looking for Jedi that they can find. And so yeah, they get into some of that stuff there. And yeah, he's doing his own thing, but then as I get into Leia is on, I forget what the planet that she is on. But yeah, she's staying with her family and sort of gets into some trouble there that ends up getting kidnapped, and Obi-Wan is asked to risk his life and his safety and his mission to help her out. And it's a pretty good time getting out to some of these other planets that aren't Tatooine there. And yeah, it's dealing with a lot of the fallouts from that episode 3 and all that Order 66 stuff that is going on. So yeah, it's a fun time. Curious to see how it goes, but I don't think it's supposed to be a super long series, like 5 or 6 episodes. So there's still some more time to go. So looking forward to that. Also watched Stranger Things season 4. The first part of that is out now. That was also out on Friday. And yeah, they have 7 episodes out for the first part. I guess a few for the second part. But yeah, like the most striking thing about the season, besides the fact that pretty much every episode's about like 1 hour 10 minutes long, is that there is sort of a whole new threat going on with this, like, I forget what the D&D thing that they liken it to, but it's kind of a dark mage, like they call the character Vecna, that's doing some gnarly shit, and they're trying to figure out what's going on as, some wild stuff is happening, and this takes place a year after the last season, which is pushing it a little bit because it's been 3 years since the last season. So the kids are mostly around 18 to 20 years old at this point for the main group. So they're kind of in a place where you're like, this kid's, mostly grown up at this point and is supposed to be playing like a, 15 or 16 year old. That's pushing it a little bit for some of them. But yeah, but you got dealing with Hopper, his supposed death, and then, characters finding out, maybe he's not dead. How do they deal with that? There's the buyers, Jonathan, Will, and Elle have moved over to California. That was a big part of the end of season 3. And so they're kind of dealing with all of that, and the kids that are still back in Hawkins, and this is all taking place around spring break. So some of the kids will be going over to California to see, the ones over there, and the others stay behind and all that. So there's a lot going on. So I can see why they have sort of longer episodes here, though there are maybe a storyline or two that maybe burn a little too slowly, whereas the others kind of make more sense. But yeah, worth checking out. It's still a lot of fun. Kind of seeing how this all is a bit more of a different kind of horror to it than the last 3 seasons have been. I went and rewatched those 3 seasons before starting this, and yeah, it's definitely a bit different in sort of the way they're going with some of the stuff. But yeah, that's a good time, and I checked out another Netflix thing, a movie called Senior Year.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's a very weird show or weird, very weird movie that features, let me see here, Rebel Wilson. And she has, you know, lost quite a bit of weight from a lot of the roles you know her as. But it starts with her younger self in high school, who is kind of a loser when she first moved over from Australia. Then kind of resolves to become, you know, a cheerleader, become the most popular girl, and kind of does that. But then, you know, before prom and all that, they do, you know, a pep rally thing, and she gets into an accident and is in a coma for 20 years, leading to, you know, waking up in, I think, 2022 is when this is set in, as a 37-year-old and deciding to finish high school. And a lot of the humor is cringe humor to it, as she is very much more lewd in the way she talks about things compared to, you know, a modern high school where, you know, they're trying to teach, you know, about respect and diversity and, you know, dealing with all of that stuff. So, yeah, it kind of ultimately ends up pretty good, but there's, I definitely had to stop it a few times. Just like, all right, I've had enough of this just cringy humor for a bit.
Yeah.
And kind of broke it up into a few attempts at watching it. But yeah, it's solid for what it is. Nothing really amazing or anything. It's, you know, basically what you think it's going to be. So yeah, there's that. And that was kind of it for watching stuff. For games, I got from one of the PSN sales, Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origins, that I started. I'm still kind of in the first mission, but I'm liking it so far. It's kind of like if you took the kind of modern style of Final Fantasy game and set it in sort of a more Dark Souls type of framework. It's not completely there with it, because you're not getting like souls to spend on your upgrades and that kind of stuff. It's more just you can switch between jobs as sort of the job system there, and you are leveling those up, and as you get back to a, you know, a bonfire equivalent, I think they just have it be like a, that's a bunch of cubes. Who knows? You can do your upgrades there, but along the way you're getting lots of loot to drop that you know, you use an outfit your character, and you can do it on a per job basis. You have two other people in your party as well, so you can outfit them, and you'll eventually get equipment that is more favored towards certain jobs, that kind of stuff. So you're kind of building out your setup that way, and they have a lot of stuff going on there. So it's been pretty solid so far, and the story stuff is very dumb, as they're just constantly talking about killing chaos, that kind of thing. So that's been pretty good so far. As for anything else I've been doing, I've been playing more Fortnite. The season ends in about a week or so, so I've been putting some more time into that, and I picked up Obi-Wan in the shop. So I have Obi-Wan murdering people with shotguns and all that kind of stuff that Obi-Wan does, and knifing people to death. So that's been a fun time. And also just playing more Rocket League, enjoying that. And that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as I told everybody, you know, last week I contracted COVID for the second time. And fortunately, because, you know, I've been vaccinated and I've also had it before, after like that Sunday and Monday of like having just a scratchy throat, pretty much all my symptoms disappeared except for just being kind of really lethargic for a couple days. And now I feel completely fine. So, you know, it's mostly, you know, it's just a goes to show that if you've got the proper, it's vaccination definitely helps, and this definitely shows. And it also, you know, helps that I've had it before. So, you know, yeah. I finished Life is Strange True Colors, and yes, that game is fantastic through all six chapters. Highly recommend it. Yeah, so with that, I've basically been playing, well, two things now. One is Tetris Effect Connected, and you've played Tetris Effect before, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you know what Tetris Effect is. It's made by the guy who did, you know, games like Rez, and it's a version of Tetris that uses a lot of, it uses, like, a lot of music and a lot of really cool visuals, and it's actually really amazing how they programmed that game, because the way that the game is, you know, because, you know, since sound and music is such a big part of it, you're somehow contributing to the song every time you, you know, move a block or, you know, switch it around in just many amazing ways. And, of course, the soundtrack itself is pretty awesome with all types of, you know, you got all types of, like, EDM and techno and world music and drum and bass and electro jazz and all that type of stuff. Really good stuff. A lot of fun. I also realized that I'm terrible at Tetris. I've never been good at Tetris. But I don't care because it's still a load of fun. And then other than that, you know, I'm also playing Danganronpa 2, which I've gotten, you know, a little further into it now. And anybody who ever played, like, the original Danganronpa, you know that, especially when it comes to, like, the class trial portion, where you have to start, like, paying attention to what people are saying, and there's all these, like, weird new things that... So, like, in the original, you had to basically deal with, like, having, like, a truth bullet that you would shoot at a certain group of words on a statement as they appear on the screen, because it's meant to represent that, you know, all the various students in the class are debating on who the killer is. And the point is you're trying to, like, contradict what they've said to, you know, point out that their argument is flawed. So, like, you know, one person says, like, this thing was here because that person was there, and then you'll truth bullet from, like, another person's account and say, no, that's wrong because we know they weren't there because they were with us the entire time, or something like that. But then they started at in the sequel, they started adding a bunch of new stuff, like consent one, which is where you are agreeing with a person, so you essentially have to take the truth bullet and you have to turn the logic around so that you're sort of, you know, backing up another person's argument. Then they added on another thing where you have to use the directional button to sort of, like, make a sword slash because you're trying to cut through another person's, it's like a debate, basically. Basically, and you're trying to cut through the other person, and then when the particular statement that is needed in, you then use I forget what it's called, but it's basically a statement that acts like a sword, and it's like, allow me to cut through those words, and like that. And then at the very end, at the end of the class trial, just as you're finally finding out who the killer is, you have to do this weird rhythm game thing. And even before then, there's this thing called the Hangman's Gambit. It's on the one hand, the game is fantastic. I love these characters and I love this universe, but they do make parts of it needlessly complicated. But moving on from there, books. I went to the used bookstore the other day and got a nice haul. One of the books I got there was a book that was called When a Darkness Falls, and it was written by a gentleman by the name of Paul Zindel. Now, Chris, you and me are of the same age, so I'm not sure if you ever came across this guy. And especially those of you out there who aren't American may not be familiar with who this guy was. Paul Zindel originally got his start as like a Pulitzer Prize winning dramatist in like the late 60s. And then he got approached by an editor asking if he could write some stuff for young people. And so he became very famous for writing for being a real respected author of literature for young adults. There was this one, his first book that he published way back in the late 60s was called The Pig Man. And, you know, especially if you're like me and you went to high school and did high school literature, you probably had to read that book at one point or another. He's generally considered to be like one of the foundational authors of the modern young adult fiction genre, along with, you know, people like Judy Blume and Lois Duncan and stuff like that. And he typically wrote these books that they often had kind of zany titles, but they also had like a lot of humor in them, but they also tended to like approach some pretty heavy subject matter involving teenagers, like, you know, death, romance, suicide, violence, peer pressure. When a Darkness Falls is the only book he ever wrote for adults. He published it in the early 80s. And it is so weird going from, you know, remembering Paul Zindel's books from when I was in high school, because I read a bunch of his stuff when I was in high school. Like him and Robert Cormier were like the two young adult writers I read more than anyone else back then. And then coming across this book, which is very visceral. It literally opens up with a teacher finding out that somebody had broken into the elementary school's animal hatchery and had killed all the rabbits and the chickens, and finding like their beheaded corpses in the bathroom. That's how that book opens. So it's really bizarre going from, you know, oh, this is a story about a guy, you know, about a guy who's like, you know, a guy and a girl who end up befriending this old, weird old dude who lives in a house somewhere, too. Yeah, there's this madman on the loose and he's mutilating small animals and the little kids are crying because of it. Holy shit. Yeah, other than that, just music as well. Nothing really major to talk about there. So that has been my week. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we move on?
Nope.
Okay. Well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And considering the events of this week and just sort of some of the stuff we're going to be going into, I thought it might be a little pertinent, a little appropriate to dedicate this week's episode of Brandon's Random Factoid to a little bit on the history of the National Rifle Association, the NRA. Because believe it or not, the NRA were not always completely insane. And I know, especially when people from the outside looking in look at the NRA today, they think these guys must have always been a bunch of insane, crazy gun nuts. They weren't. No, they weren't always like this. In fact, for the first good, like, 60 years of their existence, actually, not even 60 years, more like almost damn near 100 years of their existence, they were basically apolitical. They dedicated their entirety of their organization's existence to only sportsmen, hunters, target shooters, conservation, gun safety, things like this. Things that actually, you know, make sense, are actually good things to support. And, you know, a lot of the major, like, early NRA, you know, heads would talk about, like, you know, we personally think that, you know, the sort of flagrant display of firearms in public is inappropriate and largely not you know, helpful or in any way helps the training and usage of firearms in any way. And they were, this was pretty much their entire sort of thing. Then in the early 70s, it started to change a little bit. They decided to start a political wing, specifically based around defense of the right to bear arms. Now, before we go any further, I need to tell you, they hadn't gone completely insane just yet. They started doing this in the early 70s, but it was still largely an apolitical thing, or more of a, shall we say, bipartisan type thing. They weren't really dedicated to one particular political party or the other. It was just, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, a little bit to the right to bear arms, and we're going to defend that and everything like that and all that. It changed in 1977. Now, if you talk to any old school NRA person, they'll tell you about this event. And in NRA historiography, it's called the Revolt at Cincinnati. It's also called the Cincinnati Revolution or the Cincinnati Coup. And basically, what it comes down to is this. It's not a terribly complicated chain of events, but the effects of it basically changed the NRA completely, pretty much top to bottom. And furthermore, it caused a massive schism in the NRA itself, between the educational and political wings of the organization that to this day has never been healed. But basically, it goes right there. Yeah, so like I said, up until the early 70s, the NRA, it mostly focused on things like marksmanship, stewardship, recreational events. They didn't do a whole lot of political lobbying. In 1968, when the Gun Control Act was first started, the NRA abstained from something called the Citizens Against Titans campaign, who was a, for those of you who don't know who he was a Democratic member of the state for the state of Maryland. These two gentlemen, named Harlan Carter and Neil Knox, decided to challenge the one of the heads of the organization at that time, which was a guy named Maxwell Rich. So what you need to know about Harlan Carter is two things. One, he may or may not have committed murder when he was younger. He killed a 15-year-old boy named Raymond Cassiano when he was a kid. And this kind of turns into the fact that he was part of something. Some of you may not. It's part of, it's kind of part of American history a lot of people don't like to talk about. Chris, have you ever heard of something called Operation Wetback? Because if you haven't, I'll explain what it was. Basically, after the Bracero program had sort of expired in the U.S., the border had been closed, there was a lot of Mexicans who had decided to make, you know, lay down stakes in the United States. They are now what we call undocumented immigrants. And basically, this was a thing that was created by the director of the INS at the time, Joseph Swing, in cooperation with the Mexican government, in which they basically just rounded up as many of the undocumented immigrants as they could find and shipped them all back to Mexico without, you know, it solved nothing. In fact, it ended up catching a couple of actual registered citizens in its net, and it took them a long time before they were able to re-enter the country again. What you need to know is Harlan Carter actually helped lead that operation in Texas. He actually commanded the Border Patrol in Texas during this time period. So he, as you can probably guess, was kind of a racist asshole, especially when it came to Latino Americans. The second thing you also need to know is he liked guns the way that some people are way into other things in a not good way. He was very much one of the first generations of those people who really got obsessed with the idea that the U.S. was going to take your guns any minute now. The other guy that he with, a guy named Neil Knox, was a writer for Guns and Ammo back in the 60s, and that just made him just insane with rage. And so in the 1970s, he met up with Harlan Carter, and they both decided, you know, because at this point, the political wing of the NRA was very small. You know, the sort of political part was just a part of what they thought was their overall mission of, you know, conservation and marksmanship and all that stuff. They didn't, you know, they considered those other things to be equally, if not more important than the other. So what happened is Carter and Knox got a bunch of people who agree with them. They ended up being called the Orange Hats. They showed up at their convention in 1977, that year, which of course happened to be in Cincinnati. And they all started walking around the convention center grounds wearing these orange hats, carrying walkie-talkies, keeping tabs on all of the old guard that had spent, you know, multiple decades in their positions, including Maxwell Rich. And they actually managed to unseat several members of the incumbent leadership, which from that point on completely altered the entire focus of the organization. Carter ended up replacing Maxwell Rich as its vice president. And he then in turn changed the position to become a member elected office. Knox, on the other hand, was elected as head of the group's Institute for Legislative Action, which if you ever see any kind of NRA conventions going forward, including the most recent one, you'll see behind it the NRA /ILA logo. The ILA logo is the Institute for Legislative Action. It's the political wing of the organization. And as you can probably guess, they're the ones who are pretty much responsible for all of the awful shit that comes afterwards. Preceding the convention in 1977, the NRA had made plans to move the group's headquarters to D.C. In Colorado Springs. That would focus on things like conservation and recreational shooting. It was rejected. And a lot of people sort of see this particular as being like the show that the recreational part was really no longer their major focus. Instead, they put all the money that was going to go towards the center for the ILA. We don't really know how much. They've never disclosed how much of that money went to it. The NRA redefined its entire stance on gun control, defending protections provided by the Second Amendment, or at least claiming to. And the thing is, even there, they've been kind of bullshitting their entire existence, because, you know, even like fucking Wayne LaPierre, the guy who's generally considered like the absolute head of the just god-awful organization, its spokesperson, even he like has changed his tune at least three or four times when it comes to assault weapons. But yeah, that is essentially what you need to know about why the NRA is as screwed up as it is. It was basically taken over by a bunch of racist nut jobs in the 1970s and has never looked back. And that has been another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay. So, I guess here we go. We got to do it. We'll start off, of course, with our show proper, as always. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And you know exactly who it is, who the asshole of the week is. An 18-year-old gentleman who literally he had just turned 18. Like, I think this was just a few days, at least a couple days after his 18th birthday. He got a hold of a couple of AR-15s and a shotgun, went into an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, Texas, murdered 19 children and two adults, and then in tune, one of the victim's husband actually died of a heart attack just the other day. So you could say the victims are now 22.
Yeah, and the weird thing is the amount of people that got injured, not killed, has not really been a thing that's been out there consistently.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Yeah, we're going to get to that because if there's one other thing that's really infuriating about this, it's the fact that the cops have been unbelievably incompetent throughout the entire goddamn process. We'll get to that. But first, we need to just talk about this because it happened again, guys. And keep in mind, this was just 2 weeks after the shit that went down in Buffalo.
And this is about 10 years after the Sandy Hook. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, what else is there that can be said? Obviously, like I said, Sandy Hook made me sad. This one just made me furious beyond all reasonable measure. Yeah. Actually, no, it is completely fucking reasonable. I take it back. It's completely fucking reasonable because this one incident among everything else showed that all of the fucking talking points from the GOP are bullshit from beginning to end. Every single goddamn one of them. All of them. The whole thing about, a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. There was already a good guy with a gun on the scene. He didn't do jack shit. There were then another, 20-something good guys with guns with fucking helmets looking LARPy-ass motherfuckers standing outside of the building. They didn't do jack shit.
Yeah.
All right. So that's one down. Number two, you know what? Fuck it. You know what? I'm too pissed off to list the other ones. My brain just can't think straight right now. How many more fucking children have to die until we realize that we are not obligated to put up with these people's fucking gun fetish? Really? And don't come to me talking about your fucking freedom. You know what? Fuck your freedom. If your first response when you hear a story about a mass shooting, especially one at an elementary school, is not absolute horror and sorrow at the whole thing, but instead your first thought is, oh God, they're going to take my guns. Maybe we should fucking take your guns. There, yeah. I fucking said it.
I'd be fine with taking them and melting them down right in front of them.
Because you have shown that you are neither mature enough or responsible enough to comprehend the responsibility that comes with owning a firearm like this.
Yeah, and the politicians are encouraging it by, removing things like the need for a permit, concealed carry permits, all that kind of stuff. You can just, as this kid did, he went and bought a couple of guns. A ton of ammo.
Yeah.
No red flags were passed.
Nope.
Nothing like, oh, you gotta wait for this.
Yeah. Because
as an 18-year-old, he doesn't necessarily have any, things on his background that would show up.
Also, remember, this is Texas we are talking about, which has some laxest gun laws in the country.
Yeah.
And
Abbott was... People found old tweets of Abbott being like, oh, we're only the number two state with gun. Yeah, we need to do better than that. That was like 5 or 6 years ago, at least.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about that is that these assholes think all of California and they only think like Los Angeles and San Francisco. It's a big fucking state.
Yeah.
Okay. And here's something else, okay? When all this had, and of course, the first thing they tried to say is, no, now is not the time to politicize this. That shit went right out the window when they realized that people weren't going to fucking take it this time.
Yeah, that line doesn't mean anything.
The backlash was so enormous that they basically dropped that whole line pretty much within 24 hours of this happening. So then they started talking about, why don't we make it so that, there's only one entrance, into the building, or, why don't we have it so that, there are a bunch of fire doors. I can like have like trip wires, or why don't we give the kids like ballistic blankets? And I'm like, motherfucker, why is it that the burden has to be on the fucking kids for this shit? For the fucking teachers. What? Teachers already have to be like fucking educators, psychiatrists, and fucking doctors all at the same time, and they barely get paid enough as it is. Now you want them to be armed fucking security?
I mean, these cops couldn't stop him. What is a teacher supposed to do?
No, none of these fucking cops have to. They didn't want to go in because they were scared of getting shot. It's your job, you motherfucker!
Yeah, they saw the vest on him, which didn't have any plates in it.
No! You know what is in it? What's in it? Yeah, you know. Do you know what that fucking vest is made out of? That isn't fucking Kevlar. It's nylon.
Yeah, it's some sort of nylon fabric.
Without those plates, it's just a fucking glorified vest with a bunch of pockets in it.
Yeah, he didn't get those plates because they're expensive as hell.
Yeah.
You didn't have that money for the gun and the ammo.
Yeah. And you know what? Since we brought it up, now it's time to move on the shit to the cops, because the cops showed up and they didn't go into the building for a goddamn hour.
Yeah, so okay? The whole timeline.
The timeline is fucked. They waited at least 40 minutes before they decided to go into that building. The whole time, they could hear gunshots, they could hear screams, they could hear cries for help. And what did these fuckers did? They just walked around kicking shit, doing jack shit. While a bunch of grieving families and parents were like, do something, do something. And then they tackled those fucking those parents and then threatened them with tasers. One woman at least managed to get out of her handcuffs, managed to jump the perimeter and got her kids out and a couple of others. Some of these cops actually sold out the whole fucking student body and actually went and saved their kids while the other kids faced the businesses of an AR-15.
Yeah.
And they kept changing their fucking story since Monday.
Yeah. It's fucked the whole thing. So yeah, he shot his grandmother before he left. Luckily she survived so far. Mm-hmm. Let's see, that was 11:28 a.m. Local time. Showed up at the school about 11:40. And the cops got there about 11:44. So pretty quick response, all things considered. But yeah, he got out the door and shot at these people coming out of I don't know if it was a funeral home or something like that nearby. Luckily didn't hit any of them, but then you know, approached the school, and the cops seemed completely afraid of getting shot, which is a reasonable human response. It's not supposed to be for the cops, because they should be in a sort of situation.
That's why you get a badge, motherfucker. You signed up for this job. You knew what the risks were.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If they're afraid of getting shot by this weapon, how is it legal?
Exactly. And on top of that, I need to also add another layer to this. They actually had protocol for what to do with an armed shooter on a school campus. And they didn't follow it.
No, they didn't follow much of anything.
No.
But yeah, the whole thing, and yeah, they basically let him just rush past him, didn't stop him.
They saw this fucker go like out of one building and go. They didn't do jack shit. They didn't raise their guns. They didn't say anything. Just fucking watched him stroll across the goddamn campus into another building so he could find more victims.
Yeah, he shot a bunch of people. I don't know the whole timeline as far as where he was, who got shot there, and then when he moved on. But essentially, they said, let's see, he was on the premises for up to an hour before law enforcement forcibly entered a classroom that he had barricaded himself in and killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So like 40 to 60 minutes at least, and the whole process was like 78 minutes, something like that they said so far. Of course, you got Abbott doing his act of like, oh, I didn't get the full story here. I'm mad at them. And it's like, you're not going to do shit.
No, he wasn't going to do jack shit because he knows where his bread's.
He was campaigning later this day.
Mm-hmm.
So to show what his priorities were here. But yeah, they say here, and then the shooting stops and he barricades himself in a classroom. That's where there's kind of a lull in the action. All of it, I understand, lasted about an hour, but this is where there's kind of a 30-minute lull. They feel as if they've got him barricaded in. The rest of the students in the school are now leaving. And so, yeah, there's this whole story coming out that they just let him hang out in there because apparently the, I think it was commander or operations, it was off-site, I assume, was like, well, all the kids that, you know, are alive are out of there, surely. They assume anybody else that would be near there is just dead, so we don't need to rush to do anything right now. And it's like, that's some ballsy shit.
That is not an assumption you should ever make during an active shooting.
Yeah, because there was one of the kids that survived, literally, I don't think I could have done any of this, took her friend's blood, rubbed it on herself, and tried to act dead so that he wouldn't...
She was 11. She was 11 years old, by the way. 11.
Yeah. And, like, doing shit that you would expect in, like, Vietnam.
Yeah.
And that, maybe not even the blood part, just mud they would be doing that with. And, yeah, this... it's... Every point, you're like, all right, everybody involved, write up a list, fire them all. They do not need their jobs anymore.
From the
failed the basic...
Yeah.
They failed the basic point of their job.
Yeah.
Which is to stop this guy and protect the kids as best they can.
And apparently with this particular police department, it's actually part of a pattern. They have notoriously low response time in that state. And they've been known to like help like known sex offenders stay on the force. I mean, they've got a laundry list of bullshit going with them. And this is just sort of the cherry on top. But yeah, this whole the whole goddamn precinct from top to bottom, just fire them all. Don't even give them their goddamn pension.
Yeah, they didn't do their jobs. If I fucked up my job this badly, you know, I would have been gone in minutes.
Yeah. If you you signed up for this, you knew what the risks are. If you don't want to do the job, then shit or get off the pot and let someone else there. Someone who will actually do it.
Your job is to put yourself in harm's way.
Yeah.
Not but turn into security guards.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, this is also just another point to point out at the bullshit that is the establishment that is American policing. Because remember, American police are not actually there to protect you. They are there to protect property and keep order. And on top of that, they do not even have to do anything to protect you. That's been basically the basic rule since the 1970s. So, just again, ACAB. But
yeah. And they had a school resource officer on campus that was useless.
Again, that whole thing about how we got to have armed security in the campus. They had one. He didn't do jack shit.
Yeah, he was more afraid of the guns than the cops were.
Yeah, exactly. And now we got to move on to the sort of other part of this bullshit, which was the Republican response. Because, like I said, they tried at first to do that whole "let's not time to politicize," and they basically stopped that after the first day because nobody was fucking having it.
Yeah.
This incident was so horrible that even some of the usual suspects were like, no, we're not doing that this time. We're not taking that. It is now time to actually start talking about shit.
Well, they still sent thoughts and prayers.
Oh, they still sent their bullshit thoughts and prayers, of course. That's always their first fucking response. That's their cover. But, again, nobody's fucking having it this time.
Yeah.
So they've then gone on to basically do that whole like spread shot thing where they try to hit everything but the actual target itself.
Yeah.
Okay, well, first of all, it's like, the teachers weren't armed, or no, they don't have too many entrances and exits to the school. Maybe the kids need to have like ballistics things in their backpacks. No, or maybe it's the video games and the rap music. Did you know some motherfucker actually brought up the rap music this time? Like, how retro, the violent TV shows and the movies. Or there was even one motherfucker who's like, well, yeah, but that's the risk you go when you don't go to a private school. That guy, he was an asshole that was on Laura Ingraham. He was actually blaming the fucking parents because he's an asshole.
Yeah, somebody's like, oh, it's because of this woke ideology they're teaching in schools.
That doesn't even make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, there goes John Cornyn, who also today was talking about, oh, they got to make split-second decisions. You can't, you know, come at it in hindsight. It's like, they had 78 minutes to make decisions, and they did nothing.
Yeah, you were outside the you, and they also tried to make excuses like, well, we were waiting for, like, our SWAT team.
It's like, you were supposed to do the stuff to keep them out of the building.
Yeah.
Before they got there. It's like,
that's why you establish a perimeter.
Literally had no protection. You could have shot him then.
Yeah.
And saved like said, 20 people's lives.
He had that vest with no plate, you know. But, and then, you know, Fox News sure as hell didn't help. They basically tried every single excuse they could think of to deflect. And again, nobody's having it.
Yeah.
And the ones that are having it have shown to be just unbelievably callous.
Yeah. There's people condemning parts of Joe Biden's speech, like him talking about deer and Kevlar, and it's like, oh, why is he joking? And it's like, that wasn't a joke.
That was not a joke, bro.
That's him talking about how ridiculous it is to use, you know, an AR-15 for hunting deer.
Yeah.
Where it's like, that's way too much.
People
are saying things
now,
like
that. I will say probably the one critique you could have for Biden's speech is that it was a little wishy-washy, as sometimes tends to be with establishment Democrats when it comes to this issue. But,
yeah,
you know, everything else was pretty spot on.
Yeah. And, yeah, we had lots of suggestions, like Ted Cruz wants just one door. You know, ignoring, you know, fire code and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's like, that's a good way of getting all these people killed when there's a fire.
Yeah, you basically just turned it into a turkey shoot. Like,
yeah. Like the regulations state at least, I think, two other doors besides the main entrance.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're going to have to change laws there, and that's not going to go anywhere with that. But you got, you know, arming the teachers and all that. It's like, you can't even pay for them to have the supplies they need. Where's the money for the guns going to come from? Because you guys have spent, you know, decades defunding schools.
Mm-hmm.
What else was there? It was like, oh, more cops, more guards. Like, that didn't help.
Again, we already showed you. They've this school already had unarmed resource officer. Actually, most schools have armed resource officers. They still have school shootings, bro.
Yeah, they mostly just harass kids.
Yeah, especially if they're black.
And get them arrested, essentially. And all that kind of stuff for minor things that shouldn't be getting kids arrested.
Yeah.
Let's see. Sean Hannity wanted them to hired military and police contractors to patrol schools. It's like, geez, I've already got metal detectors and all this other shit. It's depressing enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the same people that screamed about the effect that masks would have on their mental state.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, training for school shootings and all that, that's nothing for these kids. Yeah, it's like, what about ballistic blankets, which people looked up? It's like, those are a couple $1,000. Where's this money going to come from?
Yeah, a lot of the teachers and their, you know, families already have to pay, you know, out the ass to buy their own school supplies.
Yeah.
And again, once again, you'll notice they're still putting the burden on the kids and the teachers.
Yeah.
Like, that needs to be a talking point. People need to point that out. Why is it that you have to keep putting all the burden on the kids?
And their parents,
why do they have to carry the weight for this shit?
Because they're paid not to do anything.
Yeah.
And here's one. It's like, we got to bring Judeo-Christian principles back to schools and prayer. Well, that'll stop mass shootings.
Like, oh, great. We got this bullshit again. Brother, this happened in Texas.
Yeah. Like, guess what else has happened in Texas? Shootings at churches.
Yeah. End of fucking story. Honestly, you don't even need to say all that. You should just say, this happened in Texas. End of story. That is the death of your argument right there. But, yeah. So, for a moment, we're going to move aside the stuff with that. And we're going to be talking about another little bit of bullshit that happened this week. The Southern Baptist Convention.
Church.
Some of you may know that in the last year or so, the SBC has been mired in a sex abuse scandal. Well, they recently released a list of accused sex abusers, and now we know the scope of the problem. And it's not only massive, it goes back many, many years.
Yeah, this list goes from 2000 to 2019. Mm-hmm. 205 pages in this database that has more than 700 entries. That is a sort of secret list that was put together by a couple of people that are no longer there. That mm-hmm. some of the members of the committee didn't even know existed until this report went into it and detailed how this all happened. So they're like, yeah, we'll release this. And they put it out the other day. And they've, you know, try to apologize for this, which, you know, isn't going to do that much until they get a class action lawsuit.
Yeah.
To get some actual money out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's, and they're still, they got a hotline set up to, for people to report abuse allegations.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's only stuff that the people in the church knew about.
Yeah.
Much less, you know, everything that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a whole fucked up thing there.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Okay. Okay. So with that, we're gonna move on from that just absolute travesty into our heroes of the week, because we got a couple. And the first one really is just head coach Steve Kerr from the NBA, because he basically just said out loud what everybody is thinking right now. Just everybody.
Yep. Let's see. In the last 10 days, we've had elderly black people killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. We've had Asian churchgoers killed in Southern California. Now we have children murdered at school. When are we going to do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to the devastated families that are out there. I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough. As 50 senators right now, we refuse to vote on H.R. 8, which is a background check rule that the House passed a couple of years ago. It's been sitting there for 2 years. There's a reason they won't vote on it to hold on to power. I'm fed up. I've had enough. We're going to play the game tonight, but I want every person here, every person listening to this, to think about your own child or grandchild, mother or father, or sister or brother. How would you feel if this happened to you today?
Yeah.
And yeah, he knows what he's talking about because his father was killed he was serving as the president of the American University of Beirut when he was assassinated by gunmen in 1984. Mm. So he's dealt with this stuff too. And yeah, it was just, watch the whole thing. It's a couple of minutes.
Yeah. But probably the King Chad of this week probably belongs to Beto O'Rourke. When Governor Greg Abbott, along with Dan Patrick, you know, and of course Ted Cruz was there too. He was in the background. He kind of gets overlooked with this incident because he didn't really do much but try to blend in with the crowd. While, you know, he was giving his press conference, Beto O'Rourke actually got up, went to the front of the room, got up there, and he actually said what everybody is thinking. He's like, motherfucker, this shit is on you. You've had several years to help fix this, and you haven't done jack shit.
Yeah, saying the time to stop the next shooting is right now, and you are doing nothing.
Yeah.
In response, Dan Patrick and others are saying things like, sit down, you're out of line, an embarrassing encounter. I can't believe you're a sick son of a bitch to come to a place like this to make this a political issue.
See, that's like, the moment the whole let's not get political thing died. That moment right there. Because he broke the unofficial taboo of actually getting in these fuckers' faces and saying it.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You're a bunch of politicians on stage talking about this event. That's political.
You've already fucking politicized it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's basically why the whole, like, now is not the time to make this political, basically just stopped working, was that moment when Beto O'Rourke basically did what all of us wanted to do and basically give Governor Abbott the finger. But there's also, and I don't know if any of y'all have seen this, there's also this photograph that was taken from the side when he's down there and confronting them, and there's like three of those dudes up on the stage who are like pointing, like, get out, and they're pretty sure that photograph's going to be up for a Pulitzer this year, if not next year, because that takes some serious balls, and he did it in the state of Texas too, might I add.
Yeah.
So
he's doing a good job of getting himself out there.
Mm-hmm.
As part of this whole thing.
Yeah. By the way, for those who don't know, on June, March for Our Lives is having another rally this year. I'm expecting that the attendance is going to be pretty big. And I'm just going to go ahead and warn everybody seeing it happening. The GOP has kind of seen somewhat which way the wind blows. But there's still too much cowards to talk about the gun thing, so they've started zero in on the cops' response. Don't let them be so myopic that they try and focus on that one thing. Because, yeah, the cops' response is a big part of this, but it's only one part of it.
Yeah, the guns are the other part. That's the result. The lax gun laws is the cause of this stuff.
And furthermore,
easier to get guns, I think it's time.
And furthermore, I think it's time that we expand the definition of gun control from not just the guns themselves, but also the people who use them, specifically showing their mental competency when it comes to owning and operating a firearm. Because focusing entirely on the guns is only one part of the issue. You know, the absolute, you know, America is absolutely drowning in firearms, and that is not in any way a exaggeration. But ultimately, a gun is nothing but a fancy piece of metal if someone doesn't use it. So we gotta also talk about the people that use them as well.
Yeah.
And that's just the last I'm gonna say on that. But yeah, goddamn, this has been a heavy week. But okay, so with that out of the way, we're going to move on to the proper show proper. And unfortunately, we have to say goodbye to Mr. Ray Liotta, a great character actor who I think for a lot of people, especially for my generation, most people knew him as the voice of Tommy Vercetti in GTA Vice City.
Yeah.
But he was active for a long time. He was in Goodfellas. He was in a lot of great movies.
Yeah, Field of Dreams.
Yep.
What else here? He was in ER, Frasier, Shades of Blue, Breakable Kimmy Schmidt, Texas Rising, Modern Family. Let's see, he was in The Rat Pack, Copland, Hannibal, Blow, Observe and Report, The Place Beyond the Pines.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an actor that has a lot of acting chops, but also can... is maybe not in the same realm of Nick Cage in terms of just going full, you know, Nick Cage. Mm. But he's like a tier or two down when Ray Liotta just goes full ham in a movie. Mm. It's one of those fun sights to see.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in his sleep while he was in the Dominican Republic shooting an upcoming film.
Yep.
Called Dangerous Waters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, kind of a sudden thing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But he left a great legacy of some amazing cinema and one really amazing video. So, you know, he's going to be remembered for a long time. But, yeah. So, R.I.P., Mr. Liotta. Okay, moving on from there. As always, of course, the war in Ukraine, still a big topic. And this week, a Russian soldier was the first to be sentenced to life in prison during a war crimes trial in Ukraine. And as it's now come out, a good chunk of the Russian military has committed some pretty horrible acts in Ukraine. Things like, stealing property, rape, mass murder, shooting of civilians, all kinds of stuff. And this guy is going to be probably the first of many to face justice.
And this kid is only 21.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pleaded guilty last week to fatally shooting an unarmed Ukrainian man in the earliest days of the war. A panel of judges in Kyiv found him guilty of violation of the laws and customs of war connected with premeditated murder, sentenced him to life. Let's see. Given that the crime committed is a crime against peace, security, humanity, and the international legal order, the court does not see the possibility of imposing a shorter sentence of imprisonment on Vadim Shishimarin for a certain period. Yeah, this was an incident that took place back in February when people thought that might be over pretty soon.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. God, it is this is going to end up being like Russia's second Vietnam. Their first Vietnam was when they tried to invade Afghanistan in the 70s and 80s. This is going to end up being their second. But yeah, moving on. Trump news. Trump lost his appeal, and now he absolutely has to testify in New York civil investigation. This is just one of several losses he's had to endure this week.
Yeah. But yeah, that's good news. Four-judge panel in the Appellate Division of the state's trial court upheld Manhattan Judge Arthur Engoron's ruling enforcing subpoenas for Trump and his two eldest children to give deposition testimony in Attorney General Letitia James' probe. And they'd appealed. His lawyers argued that ordering the Trumps to testify violated their constitutional rights because their answers could be used in a parallel criminal investigation. And yeah, saying that, let's see, the existence of a criminal investigation does not preclude civil discovery of related facts at which a party may exercise the privilege against self-incrimination. On that, so yeah, no idea when this is going to happen, but they have the right to require him to show up.
Yeah, he's been dodging this shit for a few years now.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. Now for the other thing that I thought was going to end up being sort of the major topic this week. Primaries. So one of the major primaries was right here, of course, in my home state of Georgia. Now, I voted in it, obviously. And I'm just going to tell you guys right now, I live in a podunk little part of Georgia. The polling place in where I went to was fucking packed. Like, there was a line going on almost down the road.
Yeah.
So, and that's for a primary. So I'm expecting that the actual midterms are going to be kind of a blowout this year. Just FYI. But for governor, it was between, we had, it was the primary was between David Perdue and Brian Kemp. Kemp, of course, is our current governor. He's an asshole. I've made it very clear that I don't like him. I've actually met him in person once. I gave him a fist bump, not because I liked him or anything, but because, you know, my hands were already shaking in a fist, and I would probably go to jail if I used it on his jaw, so I just fist bumped him.
Yeah.
But he was going, and David Perdue was, of course, some probably remember he tried to run for Senate last time and he lost.
Well, he was the senator and then he lost.
Yeah, he was a senator and then he lost. He lost that seat. Basically making Georgia a blue state for the first time in a long ass time.
Yeah.
And Perdue was also Trump's pick. And Trump put a lot of, you know, support behind him. And it wasn't even close. Kemp, you know, beat him by well over 30 points.
Yeah, you know, I assume you paid attention to like the debate stuff they had. Mm-hmm. Where their arguments weren't so much that they were the best person for Georgia. It's that I'm the best person to defeat Stacey Abrams.
Yeah. The reason of that is because Stacey Abrams was already the person that Democrats had decided was going to be governor. She was literally the only person on the ballot.
Yeah.
And honestly, you know, she still very much has a chance. She did a lot of great organizational work down here. She's basically the reason why, you know, we have somebody like Senator Warnock for in Congress. She's basically one of the reasons why she helped Georgia to become a blue state. And she's only grown in popularity since then. And Kemp is still got some serious issues. And as for Senate, well, you know, it's going to be the incumbent Warnock against Mr. Walker. Yeah, pretty much all of Trump's picks except Herschel Walker lost in Georgia.
Yeah, and Herschel Walker is a weird case.
Yeah,
he is just
thing, yeah.
Well, he's like a mush mouth type of dude. He just anything he talks about, he just spews out words.
Yeah,
so he's talking about like
he's very clearly suffering from CTE. Like I'm just going to say that right now because you know he used to be a football player for UGA and. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of his behavior is very, very, very much symptomatic of CTE. His like disassociative personality disorder, temper, his sort of random violence, his just a lot of stuff. And yeah, part of the reason though that he's managed to get this far is because in spite of all of it, he's managed to walk a really fine line between like Trump and not so like Trump. Like he has Trump's endorsement, but he's also sort of kept Trump at arm's length, or at least his handlers have. So yeah. So that's Georgia. As far as some of the others, the race for House of Representatives in Texas, there's a seat there that's actually too close to call as of yet.
Yeah, they are literally about 170 votes, 180 votes difference.
Yeah,
which, between Henry Queller and Jessica Cisneros. Henry Queller's. They probably will.
Yeah.
But yeah, right now they are. Like, Henry Queller is notable because he is the only Democrat in, I think, all of Congress, if not the House, that is anti-abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
and
why
for
people
whatever reason, the fucking Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats decided to support him.
Yeah.
Over the other?
Yeah, he is at 22,692 votes, and she is at 22,517.
Yeah, so very close. It's also not the only like primary, because there's also the one in Pennsylvania, the one that Dr. Oz is part of. And that one's also going to have a recount. I don't know when they're going to do it, but it's going to happen. Because it was literally like 31-31 percentage. Yeah. That other crazy lady, she didn't even, she barely got more than 12. So, yeah. Yeah. So, like, again, it's, you know, like if Oz loses it, then, you know, again, that's another notch against Trump. I'm not going to say that it's a pattern or anything yet, because I mean, as far as the Trump card is concerned, it's way too unpredictable. So I'm not going to say like this is the end of the Trump era at all. That would be absolutely stupid and foolish for me to say. All it shows is that he isn't as good as picking them as he thinks that he is. But yeah, so that was the primaries. The actual midterm elections are going to be early in November. I'm going to be voting, so I hope all of my fellow Americans will also be voting, because There's a lot at stake this year, and I think a lot of you already know that. So, yeah, if we can actually pull off the impossible and not only keep the Democratic majorities, but actually increase it, that will that may be, but it'd be a fucking miracle. But you know, I'm willing to wish on a dream. So anyway, okay, so moving on from there, we got a story from New York City, which this week removed the very last freestanding public payphone in the entire city.
Yep. This was in the streets of Midtown Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
It's heading straight to an exhibit in a local museum.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they'll be replacing it with a Link NYC kiosk, which they have around the city. That mm-hmm. sort of offers free public Wi-Fi, charging ports, buttons to call 911, and mm-hmm. screens with maps and other services on it as well. Mm-hmm. That is a pretty good thing to have, because most people already have phones. And those mm-hmm. phone booths probably do not bring in all that much money to be, you know, deserving of that real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Versus what these newer things seem to offer.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's an interesting end of an era for New York City.
Yeah. Because those things were like New York City, I think New York City was actually one of the first cities to actually start installing those in mass. Am I remembering that correctly?
That sounds likely.
Yeah, because if that's the case, then yeah, it's definitely the city. But
next up. See plenty of movies around that stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, next up. Scientists are looking to open up an ancient crystal of salt to see what life is inside it.
Yeah, this crystal they are estimating is about 830 million years old.
Mm-hmm.
That it is kind of an interesting thing here. They say there are little cubes of the original liquid from which mm-hmm. that salt grew. And the surprise for us is that that we also saw shapes that are consistent with what we would expect from microorganisms.
Mm-hmm.
And they could still be surviving within that 830 million year old preserved microhabitat.
Mm-hmm.
Salt crystals, also called halite,
mm-hmm.
This team studied were originally found in Central Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the team that published these findings in the journal Geology.
Mm.
There's a video here of a similar salt crystal showing how the liquid looks when it's moving inside.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, the idea that these microorganisms could still be alive is mind-boggling. But yeah, they say the science backs that up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that if there are in fact microorganisms in the crystal, it could be alive in a dormant state. The highlight mm-hmm. would need to be opened in order to confirm that this is in fact organic matter and that it is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And see, so there's no real danger of, you know, any sort of viral issues or anything out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it does sound like a really bad B movie, but there's a lot of detailed work that's been going on for years to try to figure out how to do that in the safest possible way.
Yep.
So yeah. There you go.
I will admit the way that they wrote it made it sound a lot more sinister than it actually is. But yeah. Next up. There's a horror Winnie the Pooh movie in the works. And just for anybody who's wondering, wait, what the hell? Let me explain. Winnie the Pooh went into the public domain a few months ago.
Yeah, the original books.
Yes, A.A. Milne's original Winnie stories went into the public domain a few months ago. So now there's a bunch of new Winnie the Pooh stuff that's coming out that's not involved with Disney, and this is one of them.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey already wrapped filming earlier this month, so they were very much waiting for this. The main villains going on a rampage after being abandoned by college-bound Christopher Robin. Christopher Robin is pulled away from them, and he's not giving them food. It's made Pooh and Piglet's life quite difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, because they've had to fend for themselves so much, they've essentially become feral. So they've gone back to their animal roots. They're no longer tame. They're like a vicious barren pig. They want to go around and try and find prey. Yeah, shot in 10 days in England.
Jesus Christ.
And I think not far from the forest that was the inspiration for 100 Acre Woods. Mm. So yeah, there you go. Whoa. It's probably out later this year, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
Oh yeah, they swapped his little red t-shirt for a lumberjack suit. Piglet is clad in black. But yeah, you won't have Tigger because that's still in copyright because that was introduced later.
Yeah.
There is a scene featuring Eeyore's tombstone. It's supposed to have been eaten by a starving Pooh and Piglet, so...
There Jesus you go. Christ! Wow, that is a little darker than I probably would have gone with, but I hope it's good. But considering, you know, the type of movies this guy makes, it's probably going to be a cult hit at best. Yeah. Schlock, basically. Anyway, next up, and as you can probably guess, we're in the inner portion of the show now. Netflix is now working on a Horizon Zero Dawn series with a few other PlayStation series in the works elsewhere.
Yeah,
I hope it's good because Netflix is not in a good place right now.
Yeah, they generally do good work. Let's see here. Yeah, they have Horizon Zero Dawn series. While Gran Turismo is also in early development. I'm not sure where that's at. Doesn't have a distributor yet. They also have a God of War series that is going to Amazon. Yeah, Prime Video. What else? Yeah, they have some stuff that's already been announced. There's Twisted Metal series that I think is also at. That's at Peacock. There's The Last of Us series that is at HBO. There's a Ghost of Tsushima feature film. As the John Wick director working on it. Yeah, so that's some of their big games. Getting some sort of TV show or movie adaptations. There's that Twisted Metal series has a wild cast so far. There's Anthony Mackie, Stephanie Beatriz, Nev Campbell, and Thomas Hayden Church. Which is like, okay, sure. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, I do hope it's good, but you know, like I said, Netflix really needs some hits right now because they are getting their asses handed to them. So yeah, I'm hoping this is good. But next up, Disney Plus. Disney is getting a Star Wars Skeleton Crew series. You heard me right.
Yeah, this was the thing that was hinted at a little while ago. But yeah, this has Jude Law as one of its main actors. It takes place during the post-Return of the Jedi reconstruction. It follows the fall of the Empire, the same as The Mandalorian. So he created and executive produced by director John Watts and writer Chris Ford, who made Spider-Man Homecoming for Marvel. And yeah, they has been informally referred to as Grammar Rodeo. Which, if you know the Simpsons episode that it's referencing, which Bart and three of his classmates take a road trip together by renting a car with a fake ID to a quote-unquote grammar rodeo. Get into all sorts of wacky hijinks. So this seems like it would also feature kids that I assume will go on some sort of wacky adventures. On a road trip or something. So there you go. That's a thing you didn't know was going to be in Star Wars.
Yep, there we go. And speaking of Star Wars, The Mandalorian 3 will be debuting in February 2023. So early next year.
Yep, there's that. And yeah, they have also said the Ahsoka spinoff is also going to be happening in 2023 at some point. Probably by summer or something like that. And it's all part of the Star Wars celebration that's going on right now, so that's why there's all this sort of Star Wars news.
Mm-hmm.
And LucasArts news.
Mm. Yep. And now we got a couple trailers to talk about here. We got a new trailer for Thor, Love and Thunder. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a pretty fun one to see. Kind of goes a little more into the story that is happening here. Mm-hmm. As you get to see a little bit more of, you know, Jane becoming Thor. Mm-hmm. And sort of how they come together to do this stuff. And you can see some of Christian Bale as Gore the Butcher, Gore the God mm-hmm. Butcher, mm-hmm. and all that that's going on there. And plenty of great use of music in this whole trailer, too. So that'll be mm-hmm. fun to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also, we got a teaser trailer for the Andor series for Disney Plus.
Yeah, sort of a prequel to Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
Featuring Cassian Andor's journey to, I don't know, whatever, him working on as a part of the rebellion,
mm-hmm.
I guess. So there you go. For that yep. is going to be a show at some point. I don't think they have a date for that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to find out at a later time.
Mm-hmm.
That looks neat.
Yeah. And finally, last four story for the night, and man, this was a fucking out of nowhere. We got a trailer for the Willow series for Disney Plus. Now, this shows that basically Disney really is trying to plumb the entirety of the Lucasfilm filmography. There are probably a lot of people who don't even know what Willow is. Willow was a fantasy film that came out in the late 80s. It was produced by George Lucas. It was one of the handful of non-Star Wars things he has put out there. And it was, I mean, from what I've heard, he wanted to make them based around The Hobbit, and he couldn't get the rights, so that's where he got this. This is basically a series that is a sequel to the original 1988 film, which is weird. Yeah. Because there actually already is a sequel to the original 1988 film. It's a book series that was written by Chris Claremont. Those of you don't know who Chris Claremont is, he's one of the probably the most famous writer of the X-Men comics. And he, back in, I think it was the early 90s or the mid 90s, him and George Lucas got together and decided to write a book series that was basically a sequel to the Willow film that was a bit darker and edgier to the original. And I'm wondering if this is going to in any way take in that book series, or if it's going to be something completely different.
I mean,
considering how Disney basically treated the Star Wars extended universe, my prediction is probably doubtful.
Yeah. But yeah, this will be out November 30th. Mm-hmm. So that'll be I assume it's like around Black Friday weekend.
Yeah.
It'll also be the weekend after that, okay. Or the Wednesday after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And, that is our show for this week, folks. Like I said, it was a very, very heavy one this week, and I'm hoping for a lighter show next week. Just at this point, it is now very clear that we cannot wait anymore for some real serious gun control legislation. So don't let anybody try and deflect from any of this bullshit. Do not let them try to, refocus the discussion on some ancillary issue. We know what the issue is here, and we need to nail their asses to the wall with it, okay? And no more of this, false civility bullshit, okay? They have no intention of being civil to us. We should be doing the same to them, all right? Just, the gloves are off now. But, yeah, so we're going to wrap it up here. Our thoughts are still with the people of Ukraine and in Russia, hoping that that war comes to an end soon. Also, like I talked about at the top of the show, even though the COVID epidemic essentially, you know, on its downturn now, we still heavily encourage you to get vaccinated if you have not been vaccinated yet. And if you are one of those people who think that a booster is something you might want to get, do not hesitate. They are very easy to get. So, yeah, join us hopefully this time next week. We will have some more stories for you. Hopefully nothing nearly as serious as what we had this week. Until then, good night. Sleep tight, everybody. We'll see you all next week.